to their classes to get their batteries charged so you can shine brightly. If you're needing prayer, spiritual encouragement, then we have a couple of our elders and their wives that will be out here in the hallway to our left. You can feel free to dismiss yourself during that time. Glad that you're here today. Glad for those that are joining us online. If you are watching us online, do invite you to drop a comment, a like, let us know that you're there. I like going back on Sunday afternoon or Monday and looking at the people that have joined us online. But glad you're here. We're going to be in 2 Kings 15 through 17. But before we get to today's sermon, I want to remind you, it's back. Parishioners Picks, all right? I've got this sermon and then one more sermon on the kings of the Northern Kingdom. And then after this is your opportunity. If you're new to Park Avenue, this is a series of sermons I preach. You tell me the passage, I preach the sermon. Could be a passage that, man, you just love, that has encouraged you. You want to share that story and use this venue to do that. It could be a passage where you think, I don't even know what this means. This is one really that has stumped me, and you can present that as well. I love getting those. And another one could be, you know what, Todd always preaches on this, but he doesn't preach on this. I'm not sure why, and I really think the church needs a sermon on this. And so you can present that as well. So you can do that online. There is a link in the app that you can submit it. You can call me, text me, email me, let the office know. Just get that word to me. The best way is to do it through the form on the app. That way I have a file form that I can go to. I always love Parishioner's Picks. I invite you to be part of it. 2 Kings 15 through 17, we're in the home stretch of the Northern Kingdom. We have 6 kings left. Started with Jeroboam several weeks ago. After Solomon, the kingdom divided into north and south. Jeroboam was anointed king of the Northern Kingdom. Rehoboam was anointed king of the Southern Kingdom. Rehoboam was a descendant of David. We've been focusing on the Northern Kingdom throughout these last several weeks. Jeroboam kicked us off, did terrible things. The downfall, the free fall that we experienced here with these last 6 kings started when Jeroboam made the fateful decision. He's going to get this golden calves in Bethel and Dan so that people don't have to go down to Jerusalem and worship. He responded out of fear. Since Jeroboam's decision, every king has followed in his steps. It has been one failure after another. So we have 6 kings left, but before we get to those 6 kings, I want to play a little game with you. I call it King or No King. And so I'm going to present a name up here, and you raise your hand if you think it is one of the last 6 kings. No cheating. Close those Bibles. Close that app. All right. Shalom. Do you think that he was one of these kings of Israel? Raise your hand. Who thinks Shalom is a king? Nobody? You're all wrong. All right. He was a king. Reigned just 1 month. But he was one of these final 6 kings. All right. Someone raise your hand. Someone's got to get better at this, right? All right. Azrael, king or no king? Raise your hand if you think Azrael was a king. He was not a king. I'm sorry. We're not doing good at this, are we, right? That is a biblical name, but he's not a king. All right. The point of this is it's got to be one of those 6 kings. All right. Round 3, Menahem. King or no king? Raise your hand if you think it's a king. He is a king. All right, he reigned 10 years. He was brutal. You can read stories about him. I don't even want to talk about the brutality that he exacted on the land of Israel. All right, round 4. Pikachu. King? No, Pikachu's not a king. If you don't know who Pikachu is, ask a kid, right? They'll let you know that Pikachu is not a king of Israel. All right, round 5. Pekahiah. King? Raise your hand if you think it was a king. Yes, there was a king of Israel, reigned 2 years. He was assassinated also. He was the son of Menahem, which none of you knew was a king anyway, so I don't know if that makes any difference. All right, round 6. Zebediah. Think Zebediah was a king? Not of Israel. No, he was not a king. He is mentioned in the Old Testament, but again, the object of this game is a king of Israel. All right, round 7, Pekah. Who thinks Pekah was a king? Pekah is one of the seven, the last six kings of Israel. He is he assassinated Pekahiah in order to become king. All right, round eight, Eliphaz. This is not near as much fun as I thought it was going to be. If I ever preach this sermon again, remind me. Leave out the game, but we're in it too deep now. Eliphaz, king or no king? Raise your hand if you think Eliphaz is a king. Not a king. You may recognize this name, one of Job's friends, but again, not a king of Israel. Round nine, Zechariah, raise your hand. You think Zechariah is a king? Zechariah is a king, son of Jeroboam II, just reigned 6 months. He was assassinated as well. All right, last one, Hoshea, king or no king? Raise your hand if you think he's a king. Let me tell you, everyone raise your hand, all right? I want everyone to be right. All right, this is, all right, double hand there. He was a king of Israel. He was, in fact, the last of the 19 kings. All right, let's look at a list of those last six kings. You probably don't recognize many of these, if you recognize any, because they didn't do anything good, all right? Again, these followed in the steps of Jeroboam. They all but Shalom gets the same verdict that he followed in the sins of Jeroboam. It's worded differently for each one of these kings. But Shalom was only there 1 month, so he didn't have a chance to even get that negative verdict. You can also see that four of those last kings were assassinated. I mean, this is a free fall. I mean, the nation is falling apart. The nation is deteriorating, and it's deteriorating fast. After, who'd we do? Now you got me. I can't remember the kings. We have 31 years left, and the kingdom of Israel, headquartered in Samaria, is going to fall. You know, when you're reading through this story, again, wouldn't it be great to be able to read through this for the first time and not know what's going to happen? I would imagine if I was reading through, I would think, all right, someone's going to step up. All right, someone is going to be a good king. Someone's going to turn this thing around, right? And so you're hoping with one king after another, you're hoping for that one person to finally turn to God. But the sad story is that none of these kings follow in the footsteps of the Lord. All of them get that same verdict. All right, we're going to get to the destruction. The nation of Israel, Samaria, is going to fall in 722 BC. But you need to know something else about what's happening in the world at that time. In the east, there is a rising threat, the nation of Assyria. And I mean, they are a war machine. They are getting more and more powerful. Their armies are getting greater and greater. Their warfare is getting more and more sophisticated. I mean, they are just rolling through the ancient Near East, just mowing one nation down after another. And so they have Israel in their sights. And so I want you to know, before the destruction, these six kings had this legitimate fear, the Assyrian Empire. And what they did is they would come in and they would just destroy a nation. They would repopulate. They would take the people out. They would repopulate it. I mean, they were vicious. And that's what these six kings have to deal with. How are they going to respond to this looming shadow that's coming from the east? Now, you and I are not kings. We are not in the position that they are in. But we can relate to these kings because all of us experience some level of fear. There's something out there that is scaring us, whether it be right now. Some of you are living under a shadow. Some of you are living under anxiety. If not now, in the past, you've recognized there's something out there. If not in the past, if not now, there's going to be something else in the future that's going to strike fear into your heart, just like the Assyrian army struck fear into the hearts of these six kings. So the fear is real. We struggle with health. We don't know what our health is going to come. We get the diagnosis and we're saying, how in the world am I going to work through this? Our relationships, we struggle in our family. We struggle in our marriages. How am I going to make it through that? We struggle with money. How am I going to make ends meet? How am I going to plan for the future? We struggle with our jobs. Is my job secure? Is it going to be there next week, next month? And so we have these fears. We have those Assyrians that are striking fear into our heart. The question is not, is there fear? The question is, how are you going to respond? Who are you going to run to when that shadow looms over your life. I want to look at three of those kings and to see how they responded to that fear of the Assyrian army. First, let's look at King Menahem. This is in 2 Kings chapter 15, 19 through 20. What he decides to do, he's got Assyria, and he says, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to pay them off. I'm going to pay them tribute. Now, this was not uncommon in the ancient world, where a subordinate nation would look at this looming power and say, how much do I have to give you so that you will not come in and destroy my nation? And so that's what Menahem does. He says, he's doling out cash to the Assyrian Empire. And in doing so, I mean, he is levying taxes on people that are just unheard of in order to appease the Assyrian Empire. So he decides he's going to run to money. Money is not the answer. Money is not going to solve the problems that you have. Now, you may be thinking, I thought this, I continue to think this. All right, if I could just have X amount of dollars, if I could just have a new job, if I could just save this magic number, then I'm going to be okay. Everything is going to be secure. But money is not going to solve those problems. I know money is a good thing. We need money. We need to be good stewards. But we can't love money. We can't rely on money to allay the fears and the anxiety that we have. Let me tell you, there are a lot of rich people that have all the money that you can imagine that still have this shadow over their lives. Menahem ran to money. But I think there's an underlying reason here also is that he thinks if I can just keep him happy, if I can just pay him off, and we might, instead of using money, maybe we operate under this misconception that person in my life, if I can just do something to appease them, right? And so we're obsessed with making that person happy because they're a threat in our life, and if I can just do what I need to do, whether it be money or behavior, whatever it may be, if I can just keep that person happy, then everything's going to be all right in my life. And a lot of times what we do is we start engaging in behaviors that are not consistent with our faith, which are not consistent with our ethics. But we say, all right, if I do this, then that person is going to be happy. Right, some relationships are defined by that. Some marriages are defined by that, where one partner, one spouse thinks, I just need to keep this person happy. And if I can keep that person happy, then everything is going to be okay. And so we just pour ourselves into doing things, and even things that may conflict with who we really are. Let me tell you, if that describes a relationship that you're in, that's not good. That's not good. Menahem is going to realize there's not enough money. I cannot keep Assyria happy. Eventually, my money is going to run out. So if you are in a relationship like that, we need to do something. You need to do something about that. I want to remind you of our counseling ministry that we have that you can take advantage of. Call one of us and we'll get you in touch with a counselor. But you can't just live your life in fear. If I don't do this, X, Y, Z, then this person, this looming threat is going to eventually go away. Menahem runs to money. All right, let's look at Pekah. What does he do? Pekah runs to people. Right, this is his strategy. All right, this Assyrian army is huge. It's big. We can't win this on our own. But maybe if I have an ally, maybe if I connect with another nation, maybe that's going to solve my problems. And so here in 2 Kings chapter 15, we see that Pekah makes an alliance with the king of Aram. All right, he has nothing in common. All right, Israel, the people of God have nothing in common with Aram, and so he is sacrificing who he is. He is sacrificing his ethics, thinking, if I just have another person on my side, then I'm going to feel peace. Then that threat is going to go away. And we can see in 2 Kings chapter 15, sometimes as these stories are told, they kind of circle back. But the king of Assyria looks at that, and it makes him even more mad that he is making this alliance with this other nation. Sometimes we look to people to solve the problems, to eliminate the anxiety that we have. And so we just think to ourselves, back to Douglas, you know, if I could sit at the cool table, then my life is going to be great. If I could, have this person as a friend, maybe a person of influence, if I can just get them on my side, then my life is going to be better. There are people with lots and lots of friends who still feel this anxiety. That is not going to solve the problem. We have that device in our pockets that we're probably using right now, our phones, and we think, if I could just get some more likes to my post, if I can just get some more followers, if I can just get some more fans, if I can just get some more friends, if more and more people like what I'm putting out there, then my life is just going to be all better. I'm just going to look to people to fill that void that only God can fill. Now again, people are not bad. Friendships are not bad. But that's not going to be the solution to our problem. In fact, I've heard studies that say all of this social media and all of these connections that we're making with people are actually enhancing our anxiety and our worries rather than diminishing that. So the answer is not, I'm going to get more people on my side. That's going to make that shadow go away. All right, let's go to Hosea, who's the last king of Israel. This is what he does. And this really should blow your mind when you see what Hosea does. He's going to be the last king. And so the threat is even more imminent. Assyria is right there. In fact, Assyria has come into Israel. It's taken over the northern part, Galilee. Some of the northern tribes have been vanquished already. They haven't made it down to Samaria. But Hosea decides to do this. I'm going to go to Egypt. I'm going to go to my buddy Egypt. See if they'll help out. Now, granted, Egypt was a power in that time. But Egypt? We're going to go back to Egypt? What's the history of the Jewish people with Egypt? Slavery, oppression. God took you out of Egypt. That should be the last place that you go to try to find an answer to this fear that you're experiencing. So what do we do? What are our Egypts in our life? Sometimes what we'll do when we're experiencing this stress, this anxiety, we go back to our old habits and we think, maybe they'll work this time. And so we're living this Christian life. We're following Jesus and things, there's going to be stress, there's going to be troubles, there's going to be tribulation. And we start thinking, you know what? This isn't working. And so I'm going to go back to what I tried before. And it's not because it worked, because it's familiar to you. That's what Hosea does. I'm going to go back to Egypt. And sometimes we do that as well. All right, so these three kings, Assyria is knocking at their door, a legitimate fear, right? A legitimate threat. How are they going to respond? One, Menahem, he runs to money. He thinks that's going to solve the problem, make Assyria happy. Pekah says, I need some alliances. I need some more people in my life. And then Hosea says, I'm going to run to the past. None of them, not just these six, but none of the 19 kings have the idea, let's take this to God. All right, for a moment, I want to leave the northern kingdom and I want to go to the southern kingdom. Again, as you're reading through, I've kind of distilled from these stories just the northern kings, but as Scripture presents it, the story of the north and the south, they're woven together. And I think there's some beauty in that. I know there's some beauty in that. And one of those is, while we're watching the northern kingdom fall, in the southern kingdom, at times, things are going really well. And one of those times, when in the southern kingdom, where Jerusalem is, things are going really well, is under this king Hezekiah. Now, this is a little bit past the fall of Samaria, but it's the same nation, it's the same threat. Assyria comes in and wipes out the northern kingdom, and now they have their eyes on Jerusalem. They're at the doorstep. And the king of Assyria wants to take over Judah as well, and to Hezekiah. So there's this interesting dialogue that's exchanged. This is in 2 Kings chapter 18, where the king of Assyria, he comes out and he speaks in Hebrew so that everyone can understand. And basically he says to Hezekiah and the people of Judah, haven't you been watching the news? Haven't you seen how I have mowed down one nation after another? Haven't you realized how all of those nations called on their God, and one after another, I've just totally destroyed those nations? How in the world do you think, Hezekiah and people of Judah, how do you think that your God is going to deliver you from the mighty empire and the mighty armies that I have put together? So in addition to the speech, the king of Assyria, in case not everyone heard it, writes a letter and sends it to Hezekiah. What happens next is the difference between how the kings of the north respond and how a person of faith responds. 2 Kings 19 and verse 14. Hezekiah received the letter from the messengers and read it. Then he went to the temple of the Lord and spread it out before the Lord. That's his strategy. That's his move. He's not going to go to the treasury. He's not going to try to find allies that he has nothing in common with. He's not going to go to Egypt. He's not going to try to do things in the past that have failed. This is his strategy. God, here it is. And then he prays. Listen to this prayer of Hezekiah. Lord, the God of Israel, enthroned between the cherubim, you alone are God over all the kingdoms of the earth. You have made heaven and earth. Give ear and hear. Open your eyes, Lord, and see. Listen to the words of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, who has been sent to ridicule the living God. Now, Lord our God, deliver us from his hand so that all the kings of the earth may know that you alone, Lord, are God. And then morning comes. 2 Kings 19, 35 to 36. That night, the angel of the Lord went out and put to death 185,000 in the Assyrian camp. When the people got up the next morning, there were all the dead bodies. So Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, broke camp and withdrew. He returned to Nineveh and stayed there. He didn't lift a finger. He laid it out before God and he prayed. 185,000 Assyrian soldiers die. And Sennacherib says, I'm out of here. I'm not messing with this God. That is what a whole heart looks like when everything is on the line. I want to circle back to last week. David Kirkbride was up here, made an announcement about a vision that the elders is presenting before the congregation. A capital campaign, raise money, to take care of this building, let's do things, let's situate ourselves for this next 40 years so that we can be the church that God has called us to be. And on August 23rd, we're going to have a whole lot more details for you about everything that we have in mind. But let me tell you, on August 23rd, we're going to ask you to take this plan and lay it before the Lord. Because we know money is not going to solve any problem that we have. We know that people are not going to solve any problem that we have. We know that going back to what we did before that failed, that's not going to work either. So what we're going to do is we're going to embark on August 24th, that Monday, on a prayer journey, 40 days of prayer. And we're going to say, God, we want the world to know that you are God alone. And before we even talk about money, before we even think about money, before we make these strategies, we're going to lay it out before you. And then at the end of that 40 days, we're going to have a 24-hour prayer vigil from 6 p.m. to 6 p.m., one day to the next. And we're just going to say, God, you reveal this to us. If this isn't your plan, then tell us it's not your plan. If it is, then confirm that to us. But we were going to respond in faith and lay this out before the Lord, because we are not trusting in our own ability. We're not trusting in other people. We're not trusting in money. We are trusting in the God of angel armies. Now, let's take this back to you and me. When the shadows fall in your life, who are you going to run to? When the diagnosis arrives, are you going to put your hope in your finances, in your doctors, wonderful healthcare providers, as wonderful as they are? Are we going to think they're going to provide that peace that we need? When your marriage is struggling, you're going to run to different people, you're going to build a coalition of supporters and advisors. Or like Hezekiah, you're going to walk into the temple. When you can't sleep at night, 3 a.m., you're awake and you just, the anxiety has taken over you. Your future feels uncertain. Are you going to go to your phone, maybe try to make yourself feel better, count your likes? Or are you going to walk into the temple? When your job is on the line, when your future is uncertain, how are you going to respond? Because the fears are real. 19 kings. 19. Not one of them thought to run to God. So, reading through this tragic story of Israel, let us resolve in our lives, we will not put our trust or hope in money. We are not going to put our trust or our hope in friends. We are not going to put our trust and our hope in repeating old habits. We are going to do what Hezekiah did. We're going to lay it out before the Lord. We're going to pray. And we're going to put our trust in the God of angel armies. Who will you run to? Let's stand together and sing.
You hear me when I call, and you are.